The Tom Woods Show, episode 1926.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I am back from Pork Fest. Some of you may not even know what Pork Fest is. It's the Porcupine Freedom Festival, put on by the Free State Project in New Hampshire every year. It's held on a campground. You don't have to camp there. The old man here stayed in a hotel. My camping days are long over. It was thousands of people who were of like mind on things that matter. And I don't know how to describe what happens, but it's like a little community develops where people, you know, exchange goods and services the way you would without a state. And anyway, it's just a tremendous time. You get to see a lot of old friends, at least I do. And I had to do so many things at Porkfest in terms of speaking or being on panels or whatever that I just could not put out an episode on Friday. I did just four episodes last week. So that's what was going on there. I decided I could either do a good job at that, which I had been called to do, or I could do a mediocre job at that and the show. And so I decided to just do a good job at Porkfest. And I don't think I sent a newsletter out on Friday. I just had to focus on it. And I decided, should I be back at Porkfest sometime in the future? I'm not doing a million things. But all the same, it was very, very enjoyable. And I highly recommend that you consider going in the future. Porkfest, P-O-R-C-F-E-S-T. I suggest you strongly consider it. In fact, I got several guest ideas from the people I met at Porkfest last week. So I'm looking forward to talking to some of them. I'll tell you this, though. Dave Smith's pretty popular at Porkfest, as is Tom Woods. It was crazy. We were just surrounded by well-wishers at this thing. And this is, if you were to ask me what are the key libertarian events every year, and I had to name only a handful, well, Porkfest would be among them. If you're getting a huge, huge ovation at Porkfest, as Dave did, and not a peep of opposition, what does that say about the kinds of critics we seem to attract? The small sliver, it is a small sliver, but man, are they loud in the Libertarian Party or in weird crevices of the libertarian world. None of them have any representation at any of the libertarian events. And if they showed up, let's say they would, let's put it this way, they would not be given a hero's welcome. So I don't understand what's really going on here if they say that we're a bad influence on the libertarian movement. Don't take this the wrong way, but Dave almost is the libertarian movement in the sense that he expresses the ideas that we're more or less all supposed to believe in and that until recently everybody did believe in. And he's charismatic. I'm waiting for one of these people who attacks me and Dave and the others for, you know, for violating whatever left-wing standards it is they think we violated. I'm waiting for one of them, first of all, to be a normal person with even the tiniest smidge of charisma. I have yet to see any of them. When Dave has debated any of these people on his Part of the Problem podcast, they all come across like pinheads. I've not seen a single one of them have the slightest bit of charisma, which is potentially why they have no following. But also, Dave accomplishes things. He has a successful podcast. He's very, very good at it. He had a comedy special that stayed in the number one slot on iTunes for three solid weeks. He's done an awful lot. He's recruited a lot of people into the movement. But the people who criticize him, they have none of this. I mean, where are their scholars who are actually pushing libertarianism forward? Where are their authors? Where are their speakers that anyone in his right mind would want to go hear? They haven't got any of this. So who are these people? You know, as Dave says, we keep completely smashing them, and yet they don't stop. They just keep coming at us with the same arguments we destroyed the other day. So anyway, it's nice to go to a place like Porkfest and be reminded of what you really already knew, which is that the libertarian world is really no different from how it was 10 years ago overall. And that when you do encounter occasionally somebody who doesn't like Dave and you think, what? How's this possible? All he's doing is explaining libertarianism. That is all he's doing. Oh, he's had some right-wing guests he's been polite to. He's also had, how about this, some left-wing guests he's been polite to. But note, that never offends anyone. That never offends these people. It's only the terrible right-wing that's the problem. The left-wing, which dominates every sector of society, well, sure, that's no problem. That's no problem. Anyway, not the bravest people in the world, these folks. All right, enough of this inside baseball. First, I want to do two things today. The first is I want to share an insight that is pretty obvious when you think about it, but for some reason it only really hit me the other day. And to some extent, I shared it with my newsletter list, and I did bring it up while I was at Porkfest. But let's think back to 2008 and 2012. At that time, there was a sitting U.S. congressman named Ron Paul who was running for president. And a lot of people liked him, and he got a lot of people at his rallies, and he somehow managed to persuade a lot of young people to read fairly technical works on economics and liberty. I don't know of a lot of political candidates who have succeeded in doing that. I don't think anybody listened to Mitt Romney and said, well, whatever his philosophy is, I need to read that book, or I need to read that entire reading list. Of course, there is no reading list. It would never occur to any of these people to try to encourage the general public to become knowledgeable about things that affect them and things that are important and political theory and all that. At the same time that we had all these young people who were very interested in what Dr. Paul had to say, we had a lot of establishment people, and not just establishment people, to their eternal shame, also some Tea Partiers and right-of-center people who joined with the New York Times and the Washington Post in calling Ron Paul a crank. They were all too happy to join hands with the establishment. Normally, when the establishment calls somebody a crank, you have to at least look into it. Occasionally, the person is a crank. But if the New York Times doesn't like somebody and thinks that his ideas aren't even worth refuting and that you shouldn't listen to them, if at this point you're not at least willing to entertain what that person has to say, then you are not paying attention at all. So it is to their eternal shame that some folks said, well, let's see, some Fox News people and the major networks and the major television stations are telling me not to pay attention to this man, so I won't. And I will use the same language to condemn him that they use, because I know these people have my best interests at heart. Shame. If that was you, shame, shame, shame. Because who has been the best person in public life on this? Well, I would say Ron Paul is certainly in the running. And then we think about who have been the best people in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate on it. Well, the U.S. Senate, anybody better than Rand Paul? Would we have known anything about gain-of-function research in Wuhan had it not been for Rand insisting on getting the word out there? You think Mitt Romney was going to stand up to Dr. Fauci? Mitt Romney is building a little shrine to Dr. Fauci with roses and incense. He's not going to ask any tough questions, and you can say the same for the rest of the Republican Party establishment. And then in the U.S. House, who's been better than Congressman Thomas Massie, who has been a guest on this show, by the way? Who's been better than he's been on all of this, on the whole shebang, the masks, the lockdowns, the vaccines, the vaccine passports? He's been absolutely top-notch. I assume many of you saw the video clip that circulated a couple of weeks ago of Massie being asked by a reporter whether or not he had been vaccinated. And he said, well, first of all, it's none of your business. Secondly, I will actually answer your question, and I'll tell you that I have not been vaccinated, but I am not getting the vaccine until I see data that says that it will confer on me greater immunity than I have already by virtue of a natural infection. And he says, and by the way, before you tell me to follow the science, I have a master's in science from MIT. And no, it's not in medical science, but I can read data. And he just gave as good as he got, and he's been doing that the whole time. He's been outstanding, getting the word out to the public about what's really happening and getting real truth out to the public. Now, what do Rand Paul and Congressman Massie have in common? Okay, they both represent Kentucky, but that, my friends, is incidental. What they have in common is they're both products of the Ron Paul Revolution. I mean, Rand is his son, and Massie came into public life entirely as a result of the Ron Paul Revolution. So I'm gently chiding you. If you were one of the people in 2008 and 2012 who said Ron Paul's a crank and then who instead endorsed somebody else, almost all those somebody else's have been horrendous on COVID, and that's entirely predictable. What you need at a time like this is somebody who doesn't care what the media says about him, who isn't running focus groups, who's willing to talk to the general public about an issue as important as the Federal Reserve System, not because any focus group tells him to. The focus group tell him the opposite. He wants to talk about that issue because Well, he thinks the public needs to know about it. It's urgently necessary for them to understand what this institution does and what its connection is to economic downturns. I mean, F.A. Hayek did win the Nobel Prize for explaining exactly this process, so it's not, quote-unquote, crankish to talk about it. We are supposed to believe in the free market economy, so therefore, it should be at least anomalous that there should be, in the heart of a market economy, a giant monetary central planning agency like the Federal Reserve. So, yeah, Ron Paul wanted to talk about it. You need somebody like this at a time like 2020, who doesn't care that there are supposed to be certain topics that are off limits, or we all have to have the same opinion on such and such. No, you need the man who's willing to stand up and be the only one to say, I have a different opinion. The kind of man who would go down to Florida and tell the Cuban population that free trade with Cuba is the morally correct position, that's the kind of guy you need during COVID. That guy. Not the guy who's going to look at the New York Times headlines and decide what he's allowed to say. So you owe Ron Paul an apology, basically, because the very qualities you criticized him for are the qualities that are called for right now. And this is the guy who's saying all the things you're saying. So you were wrong to dismiss him as a crank. How could we dismiss as a crank a guy who gets on the House floor in 2001 and predicts exactly what's going to happen with the housing boom and bust? He said, the Federal Reserve is trying to paper over the dot-com bust by creating a real estate boom that will also end badly. He also knew that Fannie and Freddie's days were numbered. There wasn't a single other person running for president in 08 or in 12 who had had the first clue about any of that. And of course, he's right. When the market was trying to send people red lights in 2000 and 2001, the Fed turned them all green. And as a result, people persisted in the same bad investments, and that made the eventual crash all the worse. And it perpetuated the myth that housing prices never fall, and a house is the best investment you can make. As a matter of fact, the recession of 2001 is the only one on record in which housing starts actually increased rather than fell. So for heaven's sake, here you have a man who can tell the future, while everybody else in that stage is just repeating talking points from 1987. It was embarrassing. And oh, gee, he was against the wars. Well, that makes him a terrible person. But you know what? I think it's about time that we admit, after having lived through COVID and all the BS we've been subjected to by all the official sources, it's about time we admit that, you know, the official sources can be peddling a line. The official sources can be wrong. They can be misleading you, even when those official sources are talking about foreign policy. Why would that be exempt? It's the same kind of people running that. It's the same regime. Why are they Boy Scouts when they're running foreign policy, but disastrous when they're talking about a virus? And the war on terror has, in fact, been a counterproductive fiasco involving the expenditure of enormous amounts of money, with the result of more or less encouraging the spread of radical Islam. I mean, everything these people touch, they ruin. Everything they touch, that's a general rule. At this point, again, a conservative who's supposed to believe in limited government and, you know, the government sure makes things worse, has got to start applying that to things beyond milk subsidies, you know, and really get to the things that matter. And the military is one of these things that we're not supposed to criticize, because the military involves patriotism and this and that. And that's how they get you. That right there is to make it seem like you're not allowed to criticize them. Well, it's kind of like you're not allowed to criticize the COVID response, because what does that mean about you, that you're a grandma killer or whatever? Now, you all know that's stupid. Like, that's very, very low IQ to say that about somebody. You have a legitimate argument to make because you love the country, because you don't want to see these things happen to it. So you raise your arguments, and they can't believe no dissent should be allowed. We should smear you or ignore you or whatever. So you get it now? Like, why shouldn't we be able to criticize the foreign policy when it's doing just as much damage to the country and damage to other countries and not making things better? So my point is, where was the public opposition to Dr. Fauci going to come from? The Republican Party establishment? The people who gave you Tim Pawlenty running for president in 2012? Anybody even remember who he was outside of Minnesota? He was a completely forgettable empty suit governor from Minnesota. And Sean Hannity went all in for that guy. I'll never forget, one of the debates was getting started, and Hannity comes on and says, "Well, tonight all eyes are on Tim Pawlenty." I thought, what are you talking about? All eyes are on an obvious empty suit who knows nothing but platitudes? Speak for yourself. That was what Sean Hannity wanted to give you. He wanted to give you Tim Pawlenty. Anybody checking in on where Tim Pawlenty stood on lockdowns? Anybody care? Anybody become more educated because he was inspired by Tim Pawlenty? Anybody checking in with Rick Santorum to see where he stood on lockdowns? Nobody cares. That's a good sign. We had a chance to support somebody who, instead of coming up with a bunch of rehearsed answers for everything he's asked, answers that are given to him by focus group results, we had a guy who would just tell you what he really thought based on an awful lot of reading and learning. But, well, he didn't speak to us the way we expect to be spoken to. We expect a GOP presidential nominee or a candidate for the nomination to flatter us about how we're awesome and we're the awesomest of the awesome and America's so awesome. And the only reason anybody would have anything against us is that they just hate us for our awesomeness. Like, that's what I want to be told. Okay, well, at that level, I guess you're not going to appreciate a Ron Paul. But this is the kind of guy who, when everybody else is saying, this is a super-duper idea, like the war in Iraq, or like encouraging, quote, home ownership in the years leading up to the crash, or locking everybody in their houses, he's the one guy who says, no, this is a terrible mistake. And everybody laughs at him. And as I say, even parts of the conservative, completely corrupt conservative movement join forces with the New York Times to point and laugh and say, ha, look at that guy. He disagrees with everybody, so he's wrong. Don't listen to him, people. He's wrong. If you joined forces with that, time to do penance. Time to do penance. All right, that's the first thing I want to talk about. Now, before I get to the second thing, let me tell you something that right now, this very minute, starting today, can actually make your life considerably better. I follow a lot of people on Twitter, so I have a huge clogged Twitter feed. And in there, I don't just see links to news articles, but I also see people sharing information about their personal lives. And man, a lot of them are struggling. They're struggling with hopelessness, with isolation, with relationship problems, depression, anxiety of debilitating proportions. Well, folks, you don't have to suffer. Help is available to you out there. And I strongly endorse, because I've used it myself, BetterHelp. They assess your needs. They match you with your own licensed professional therapist you can communicate with through messaging, through telephone sessions, through video sessions. It's convenient, professional, and affordable, and of course, confidential. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. And in fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. All right, here's the second thing. There's something libertarians need very badly that is seriously lacking. And stop and think for a minute about the situation that we're in. We're just emerging from what can only be described as a global mass psychosis that was based on fear-mongering, misleading statements, false statements. And then to add insult to injury, most of the public not only went along, but actually demonized people like you and me and cheered the people who were tormenting them on the basis of nothing. And now you have to wonder, now that they've seen how readily the public complied with even the craziest demands, what are they going to do with that knowledge in the future? You think they might revisit some kind of terror upon us again? But that knot that you have in your stomach didn't come exclusively from the lockdowns. It's that every day our society becomes less recognizable. We've grown so wearily accustomed to it that it barely registers with many of us any longer. We are despised by virtually every source of allowable opinion for how we live and for what we believe in. And as I may have said before, I was having dinner with a businessman friend, and I told him, every institution in America hates you, because he was trying to be optimistic with me. And I said, well, okay, maybe in the long run, but right now, we're facing some problems. And you know I'm right about this. At every turn, we find some part of the establishment trying to undermine us. They're trying to undermine how we raise our kids. They feel entitled to do that for us. How we run our businesses, well, that's obvious. How we hold on to our purchasing power. Maybe we think Bitcoin will hold its purchasing power better than the dollar. Or, maybe we want to save our dollars. So they're undermining us by attacking Bitcoin. They're undermining us by eroding the value of the dollar so that we can't just save them if we want to hold on to purchasing power for the future, because we'll get wiped out if we do that. And then every day we see the range of allowable opinion shrink, more and more hostility toward dissident voices. And this is really an extraordinary situation that we're in. We're used to it now, so we don't step back and make note of it that much anymore. And yet when I encounter libertarians on social media, they're almost never talking about any of this. They're arguing among themselves about minutiae that nobody cares about. Now, I'm all in favor of arguing over minutiae because that's part of getting your ideas right and honing the ideas and getting the philosophy right. I love theory and we have to get our first principles right. I get that. My point is that the amount of time we're spending on issues like this is wildly out of proportion to how important they are to us in the here and now. Whereas by contrast, things that make our day-to-day lives challenging to the point of anguish and despair go largely neglected. So yes, I want to end the Fed. But you know what? More than that, I want my kids to have a decent life. And a lot of what we need to be doing right now is outside of politics entirely. I'm not making a judgment on politics as something to spend your time on. I'm saying there needs to be a balance because there are other issues, too, that no matter which candidate you vote for, are not going to be solved. Remember when Harry Brown wrote How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, he wasn't really talking about politics at all. And so here's what I'm thinking. We're now at a point where those of us who see the writing on the wall have got to band together. We inhabit a world where the opinions you and I hold are caricatured and condemned by what, the political class, academia, the entertainment world, and just about every corporate CEO. And that's exhausting. That would take a toll on anyone's mental health. And I think a lot of us are exhausted. I think a lot of us are demoralized. So let's take, for example, our kids. What are we supposed to do? The educational establishment despises us, and they think it's their role to replace the things we've taught our kids with the robotic, fact-free platitudes that comprise the regime's worldview. And yes, we all know homeschooling is an option, but I am quite sure that at least some of the people listening to me right now are intimidated by it, or you think you don't have time, or you don't know where to start. Or if you are homeschooling, maybe you're not as satisfied with how it's going as you thought you would be, because you thought maybe this was the silver bullet, we'll homeschool, and then it's not quite what you wanted it to be. But you don't know how to make things better, and since your extended family thinks you're crazy for doing it in the first place, they're no help. But then there are other challenges educationally that face us. Should we send our kids to college in the current environment? If so, where? If not, what else should they do? Now, for example, somebody asked me, a somewhat well-known person in the libertarian movement, said, a place like Harvard we all know is toxic, but we also know it opens doors for our kids. So what do we do? Do we say definitely not, or do we realize that it can do some good for our kid? What should we do? And I don't see a lot of people in the libertarian movement really answering these kinds of questions and helping people. Our people feel scattered and isolated and frustrated and helpless, and no help is coming. Or how about money? What are we supposed to do with money, and all we get, or a lot of what we get, is buy gold? Buy gold. Now, I have some gold. I'm not against holding gold. But that is just an unsatisfactory answer. Platitudes about buying gold just don't cut it anymore. What do you want me to do right now to hold on to my purchasing power? There has to be more than just buy gold. There just has to be. And we have smart, skilled people out there who have good answers to these questions, but we rarely hear from them. Or how about relationships? Like, how about the dating scene today? Thank goodness I'm not navigating that. I run into all kinds of young people who just despair at finding a partner. And they wonder if maybe they should just keep their opinions a secret. But it's not even just your political point of view. The dating scene is just more challenging than ever now. You should see what dating sites are like. It's just awful to try to navigate that. So what are these people supposed to do? How are they supposed to build a life for themselves? And then there are other relationships that are screwed up right now. Some people have been alienated from their families because of Trump, because of COVID, whatever. What do we do about that? Are those relationships beyond repair? So you see my point? It doesn't matter if Joe Biden gets elected or Donald Trump gets elected or even if Ron Paul gets elected. Problems like this are not going away because they don't have a political solution. And just because they don't have a political solution doesn't mean we shouldn't work on them. It's because they don't have a political solution, we need to spend extra time on them because they're not even talked about in politics. So here's what I'm thinking. I want to build a community where we are not focused entirely on the non-aggression principle. I already have that. I have my supporting listeners group. I have my blog where people comment. I have my newsletter. I have this podcast. We do an awful lot of stuff on that. And that's great. That's what I've dedicated my life to. I'm not against that in any way. I simply want to supplement it. I want to supplement it with community where we deal with these issues in our lives, a great many of which are side effects of being dissidents, of being weird, of being unusual in this culture, and figuring out ways not only to survive, but to thrive. My plan is that every month I'll bring on an expert. Now, not like these phony baloney experts who get everything wrong. I don't mean an establishment style expert. I mean somebody who's just really knowledgeable about something and has knowledge that can help us. And every month we'll bring somebody like this on, have them give a presentation, and then afterward just answer questions. And then we'll have a group where we can discuss what we're learning and talk about specifics about how it's made our lives better. This is what we need, folks. This is what we need. So I'm going to be launching something like a school of life, not just a school of libertarianism, but of life itself. Now, I warn you, it's not going to be free. Most free things people don't appreciate. You get something for free, you never use it. That's just a fact. I give books away for free, no one reads them. That's just a fact. If you don't have skin in the game, you don't do anything. But I need a budget for this thing because I'm going to pay the people who come on every month to teach us something because I want them to bring us their best. I don't want them to hold back and say, well, I can't reveal these three secrets because those are my proprietary. No. I'm going to pay them so that when they come to present to us, they give us the best they have. So we're going to tackle everything. The idea is so that we can navigate the present world so we come out prosperous, content, and fulfilled. So we'll talk about education. So we'll talk about all the different alternatives, not just homeschooling. And we'll talk about college too. We'll talk about pros and cons, what your options are. We'll talk about money management. We'll talk about investing. We'll talk about entrepreneurship. What are some simple models you can follow to maximize your chance of success? How about isolation that we're all dealing with? We can seem kind of weird to a lot of people, and we can feel alien and isolated. How do we build communities where what we believe in is reinforced rather than despised, and where our kids can grow and thrive? Or taxation. Are there legitimate and above board ways to lower your tax burden? Well, we'll talk about that. Or healthcare. I mean, we all know America has a crazy healthcare system, and it's not, quote, capitalism's fault. But that's not the kind of issue we're talking about in the school of life, is whether capitalism is the problem or government intervention is the problem. That's not what we're talking about. Instead, we're going to talk about how do you get decent healthcare in America without breaking the bank? What do you need to know? Or even something like this, social skills. If you walk into a room full of strangers, are you terrified? Do you know how to strike up a conversation without awkwardness? Well, I know somebody who's great at this stuff and who will get you confident and smooth just like that. So, and that's not all. I mean, we could come up with topic after topic after topic. They're endless. And my goal is that with each one of these, you'll become less anxious, more satisfied, happier, closer to your personal goals. Wouldn't it be nice if the libertarian world were known for being full of successful, confident people who attracted the admiration of others? I dare say that's not really the image most people have of us now, but that's where I want to get us. I'm going to be starting in on the tech side of this, of getting it all set up the way I want it, and then I'll be releasing it. But I'll be releasing it for a week. And during that week, if you want in, you can get in. But then after that week, I'm closing the doors, and I mean closing. No matter how much you pound on the door, can't let you in. And we'll go for 6 months for a beta test with my first batch of people. Those people will be grandfathered in at 50% off forever. For as long as they stay, they'll get 50% off because they helped me out when I first rolled this thing out. And then every 6 months, I'll open the doors again to more people who want to make a real change. But I feel like right now, this is the most important thing I can be doing. I'm not going to stop doing any of the other things I'm doing. I'm just going to add this. So stay tuned. I will let you know when it's about to open. The best way to make sure you don't miss it is just to hop on my mailing list if you're not on already. Some of the best stuff I do is on that mailing list. And you can get on it by going to tomwoods.com. And at the top, you'll see a red sign me up button. So click that. Make sure you don't have an ad blocker or a pop-up blocker running, because then you're going to send me an email saying your sign up button doesn't work. It does work. But when you click it, it gives you a little box to enter your email address. You can't produce that box for you if you're blocking it. So make sure that's off. But tomwoods.com, there's a red sign me up button at the top right of the screen. Click that, sign up, get on the list, and you will get a really darn good newsletter from Woods here, if I may say so. But you'll also be certain to find out exactly when this thing is launching and how you can be part of it. All right, that's what I have to say for today, everybody. Thanks so much for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.